Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to CUTV News Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn. It's a delight to have you with us. We have a very important and very fascinating show today, especially if you're a parent of a child who has special needs. I think you're going to want to pay special attention. Let me give you some facts and figures here. According to the U.S. Department of Education, about 6 million kids in America, throughout the country, get some type of special education. One out of every 10 children under the age of 14 has some type of special need. Now, when you think about it, that's a lot of parents who are struggling to navigate the uncharted waters of raising a special needs child. Thankfully, there are answers. There are resources available to give your child with special needs the best chance to have a great quality of life. Now, we're going to be talking to somebody who has started a very special organization based in New York City. But her ideas could give you ideas if you're in Minneapolis or Chicago or Cincinnati or Los Angeles or wherever. So I think it's important for you to hear about this. Our guest is founder of an organization called Many Babies NYC, which of course stands for New York City. It's a family resource nonprofit organization for children with special needs that offers free special education advocacy services to the community. It was founded by our guest, Shanique Thomas. She is a mother of twin sons who were diagnosed with autism. Now, Many Babies NYC serves as kind of a peer-to-peer resource for families who struggle to understand their children's diagnosis. As Shanique puts it, no parent wants to hear that there's something cognitively wrong with their child. But she knows that there are other families dealing with the same issue she was facing, and she would prefer not to go through it alone. And that's why she started this organization, Many Babies NYC. Now, Many Babies NYC educates families on disability laws and teaches parents on how to advocate for their children's education, empowered with confidence and purpose. And the goal is for parents to engage in their child's learning and social development throughout their entire academic career, not just while they're infants or, you know, children in the first, second, or third grade, but throughout their entire academic career. Ultimately, says Shanique, parents have to embrace the challenges of raising children with special needs. Many Babies NYC was created by parents for parents, and Shanique has gone above and beyond to help families in all five boroughs of New York. When you're a parent, you receive the services your children need, and it means the world, she says, and she is grateful for the opportunity to be of service to others because she has a lot of love and passion to see the children be the best individuals they can be. So it's really a pleasure to welcome our guest today, who has put together this unique organization which has such a very special purpose. Many Babies NYC. We're delighted to have Shanique Thomas as our guest. She's on the line with us now from her home in New York City. So, Shanique, welcome. What's it like in New York today? Is it a nice sunny day, or are you having rain? What's it like?
No, it's kind of cloudy, but at least the temperature is pretty decent.
Oh, well, that's good. All righty. Well, listen, it's a delight to have you with us here. Let me just ask you how you came up with the idea of this. I mean, you have two children who were diagnosed with autism. That's kind of a big shock to a parent to hear that, isn't it? I'm sure it was to you, right?
Oh, absolutely, because I had a very healthy and really good pregnancy to carry twins. I carried 38 weeks and 4 days. Yeah, 38 weeks and 4 days, and all my ultrasounds, everything was normal. And it wasn't until my boys were born that one of them was diagnosed with congenital heart disease. And from there, I just started getting, you know, news that was less than ideal. And I was wondering, like, well, what happened? You know, because I had such a fairly good pregnancy. But once I heard the diagnosis that my children are developmentally delayed, I was crushed, and I immediately began to panic because I thought, well, what does that mean, and what kind of life will they have? How will others treat them? How will they be included in society? A whole bunch of emotions ran through my mind, and I felt, and my heart was heavy. It was a difficult time, but I managed.
Well, boy, I can surely understand that, and I think every parent listening can certainly sympathize with you. That's a scary thing to discover and to learn about. When you first heard that, then what were your first thoughts? I mean, number one, it meant either you got to stay home and take care of them, or you've got to get some kind of special, assistance in helping to raise these kids. It presents a huge challenge. What were your first steps? Did you look around to see what kind of assistance could be available for you, and find that there wasn't a whole lot, or what was it?
Well, it was overwhelming because initially I didn't know what to do. So my first thought was, what do I do now? And where do I go to get what I need? So my first thought was with my pediatrician, and he sent me to different specialists to have my boys looked at and evaluated, just with the congenital heart disease. And then when the developmental delays came into play, they were already in a preschool. And the first preschool, my boys went through the entire year, and no one said anything. And I thought that, well, they were a little bit behind, but I thought that they would have that aha moment where they would just get it. And it never happened until I took them out of that school and put them in a daycare till I could find another preschool to put them in. And thankfully, that program director at the Crayon Box, which is located in Flushing, New York, she told me very delicately that I think you should have your children evaluated. And then she gave me my initial point of contact that started the evaluation process. And with that, it was overwhelming because I didn't have any support, and peer support. I didn't know what to expect. Other than I'm just going to have a bunch of specialists come in and evaluate my sons. I didn't know what the term evaluation meant for a toddler. I didn't know any of those things. So I had to experience a lot of things firsthand. I didn't have anyone to prep me or to warn me or to tell me what to look out for. So it was extremely overwhelming. And at the time, I was I worked in underwriting for an insurance company. And at the time, I had the flexibility where I could take off to go to these different appointments and assessments. But at some point, I had to leave my job and just fully commit myself to my sons, because they were my number one priority. At that point, nothing else in the world mattered other than getting my sons the help that they need. And I also had to educate myself on, once I got the diagnosis, what that meant for my children, because having a diagnosis of autism or being on a spectrum can mean a multitude of things. So I had to find out on my own what that meant, what their diagnosis meant to them.
Man, you are so right on. And you know something? I think you're lucky that you were advised to have the children diagnosed, because as I understand it, there are a lot of parents who have children with autism who have no clue that they do, and no one ever tells them to take them to be evaluated medically. So I think that was very good advice you got, obviously, and I'm sure you agree with that.
Oh yes, absolutely. I think that when you find out that you're having a child, you're really excited, and you know everyone. The expectation is that everything is going to be fine. My child is going to be healthy, and we're going to live this, you know, American dream and have a life, a happily ever after life. But no one prepares you or gives you the subtle hint. Well, what if you don't get good news, or what if there is something, you know, medically wrong with your child? You know, have you considered that? Do you have a support system in place? No one tells you those sorts of things. I wish someone would have been there to tell me that, you know, we're going to hope and pray for the best, but also let's be realistic, because sometimes things just happen. It just does.
And you know, I was going to point out, you have mentioned the fact that for parents in this kind of situation, one of the things they really need is tenacity. What do you mean by that?
Well, you have to be tenacious. Like, you have to have the eye of the tiger, because you're going to hear a lot of what your child cannot do. And working with many babies, one of the key factors that we push to our families is, let's focus on what your children can do. Let's focus on their strengths. Because when you shift the focus, or I call it a paradigm, when you change that, the difficult information that you have to hear, you can handle it with a little bit more ease. Now you're being proactive. You're being offensive as opposed to defensive, because you want to do what's in the best interest of your child, and you are your child's expert. These specialists, they see your child for 30, 40 minutes at a time, but you with your child more than that. And you have to be confident and know what that diagnosis means to your child. Initially, for example, when my boys, they were nonverbal for the first 5 years of their life, 4.5, 5 years. They could speak pragmatically, and a lot of their language was scripted, which means they would repeat what they heard off the television, but it didn't come from them innately. And my boys, I was told that they would have a very difficult time learning to read, and that to put my children in the Kumon program would not be beneficial to them. And I thought, no, we will not put limitations on my boys. I enrolled them anyway, and they did remarkably well. Now, had I listened to the advice that I got saying that they wouldn't be successful, I would have never known. And who knows, I might have delayed their progress even further had I listened. But I listened to that instinctive voice inside of me. As a mom, you have to be tenacious. When the naysayers say nay or no, you have to say, you know what, thank you, but every no takes me closer to my yes. And because I had that tenacity where I wouldn't accept no as the final answer, that's how my boys, I believe that's what helped my boys progress as well as they did and at the rate and pace that they did. So you have to be tenacious. You can't just accept the no and cower down. You have to rise above it, because you're in for the fight of your life, because there are going to be people who don't want your children where their children are. And what are you going to do? Are you going to cower?
Good for you.
You know, so
good,
you have
you
to be tenacious.
Yeah. Golly, you're inspirational. Well, let me ask you about how you started Many Babies NYC. How did that come about? And at what point in your children's development did you start Many Babies NYC?
Unofficially, I was just, as I got information, I met other families who were in, you know, similar situations as I was, and we would just exchange information. Sometimes I would see the same group of parents when we would go to different workshops unbeknowingly. We would all sign up to different workshops, whether it was for parents or professionals that were like special education, any type of special needs professional, and they had a forum or a space for parents, I would go and I would meet these same parents. And so we would just exchange information that way. And so that's how I started unofficially. But officially, when I started, it was in 2012, and my boys were maybe about 4 or 5 years old. And I wanted to have a safe haven for families, for parents to go where you didn't have to over-explain your child's behavior, because we just understood. You know, we understand each other. We understand that, you know, our hearts are aching whenever we get those evaluations and it tells us what our children can't do or where they fall in the percentile rank among their peers. So many
Mm-hmm. Sorry, keep going. Go ahead.
So Mini Babies, we began to gain momentum by just verbally, by word of mouth, saying, hey, you know, I know my neighbor has a child who they think is on a spectrum, but the mom doesn't know what to do. Can you help? And that's how we became known within our community, and we got our start.
So I was wondering if you had any kind of a role, not a role model, but any other organization like this anywhere that you kind of modeled this after, or did this begin from scratch with you and you've developed it, you know, right from that point, from when your kids were between four and five?
I had influences from other, you know, more established and well-known organizations because I attended their workshops. But I found that they were so large that the personal touch kind of got lost in the shuffle. I didn't want that, and to feel that you're being lost is a feeling of rejection, so to speak. And when you're a parent of a special needs child, rejection is a feeling that you feel often. And I didn't want that feeling to be felt among the families that I helped. So I did have influences from other organizations, but what I think separates me from them is that we have that personal touch. Like, we have that hand-over-hand service. We don't just give you a list of things to do and then say, and send you on your way and say, call us next week, let us know how it goes. You know, we still communicate and we still contact with our parents. We also do check-ins. I call them pulse checks. You know, hi, you know, this is Mrs. Thomas just doing a pulse check. Is Timmy okay? You know, how is he making along with the new services or the added services? So that's I had influences and like points of references of things that I wanted to do and things that I thought that I could do better that the other organizations were not doing.
Well, let's talk about what Many Babies NYC actually does. Explain to me the very services you provide and give me a kind of a picture of what the organization is and what it's about.
Well, the organization, we deal with the parents on a case-by-case basis. We have parent education, which you mentioned in the intro, where we educate the families on the disability laws. It's very important that families know that you don't know what to fight for or you don't know what to advocate for if you don't know what you're entitled to. So it's very important that you know what your rights are. Because although we provide hand-over-hand service, we want to equip the parents where they are empowered and they can advocate for themselves and also pay it forward by helping out other families that they come across. So that's what our parent education looks like. And it comes in the form of workshops and seminars. Also, I go inside the public schools, invited, and I help train the teachers, which I do professional development sessions and also parent workshops. The other element is we have parent support groups where we meet every first Thursday of the month, and we just talk about topics that are prevalent to us. They're topic driven. Sometimes we'll have guest speakers that will come in. Like we had an attorney, a special education attorney, come in and just talk about the different products that are available to parents with special needs children and just basically how to do estate planning. We also have other professionals that come in that talks about like ABA, Applied Behavior Analysts, where they talk about behavioral strategies that we can employ with our children when they're having their episodes. The other service that we provide is on-site clinic advocacy, clinic services. And basically, if the families can't come to us, we'll go to them. Like in the month of February, I was in I think it's Astoria, Queens, and I was at the Queens Public Library. No, I'm sorry, Long Island City. And I was at the library every Saturday in the month of February, and families would come in and schedule a block of time to sit with me, and I would give them one-to-one advocacy service. Now, that could mean that range from understanding their IEP document, which is an individualized education program or plan, help them understand that, help them write letters or understand letters that they received. One parent needed to go into mediation, and, you know, we walked her through the steps of this is what to anticipate, this is what you need, this is what you can say to get the services that you've been denied. So that's what the type of services that we lend to the public, and it's at no cost to the client.
You know, you mentioned that no cost. I was going to point out, as I understand it, you don't have a government funding yet, and the majority of this funding has really come out of your own pocket. You've gotten some donations, right? But I mean, this has been really your baby, and you've pursued this. I mean, good for you. How many parents are involved at this point?
The families that are helping on the administrative side, or families that we help.
Well, involved all together.
All
know.
Together, we're still small, so we have approximately 35 families that we help, that we have helped.
All right, that is pretty. That you're right. That is pretty small. So, I guess the real key in your area, and again, you're serving basically, you know, the five boroughs of New York City, is to get the word out, which of course is what we're helping to do right now, is to get this out. But then again, you know, obviously you would agree there are people in the same situation as you were or are who are in other cities who could be doing this same thing in their area, couldn't they?
Absolutely. You have to have – to be in this industry, you have to have a spirit of servitude. I believe that this – through my sons, my purpose was birth. I had no idea that I would – be advocating for individuals in the special need community. None at all. I thought that I was going to just finish out my career in insurance and just retire out. But my life took a whole nother turn. And it's through my sons that my purpose was birthed. And I feel that I am here to serve. I'm here to serve others who are in need. So as I gather information, I want to pass that information along to other families so that they can help themselves, empower themselves, and help others. That's why I do it. And I want the business to grow. I want the organization to grow so that we can help. Just from your statistics alone, there are millions of families that are affected by this. And I've only touched 35. And it's very difficult to engage the families because sometimes they might feel embarrassed, they might feel guilty, they might feel isolated. There are a number of reasons. Sometimes for our English language families, they're afraid to come out because of immigration issues and things like that. And we reassure them that have no fear. As long as your child is enrolled in a New York City public school, they are entitled to the same services as a U.S. citizen is entitled to. So it's just overcoming fears and overcoming the negative stigma that was associated with receiving special education services. People used to say, oh, you're in special ed, that's where the retarded kids are. No, it's not. We want to let families know that special education is a service. And if you have the unique opportunity to have a customized education administered to your child, why wouldn't you take it? There's so many supports and accommodations that are going to be provided to your child so that your child can be the best individual that he or she can be. Why would you want to deny them that service? So we're trying to change the stereotype and the negative stigma that's been attached to special education.
Let me ask you, you have a really good website. The website is very simple. It's manybabiesnyc.org. Manybabiesnyc.org. Tell me, from your perspective, what does the website offer? What would folks find when they go to the website?
Well, we just give them a snapshot of the main disability laws that they need to become familiar with. I'm not saying that you have to memorize it and know the exact letter of each act, but we just give you a general overview of what it is that you need to know. We also advertise, some upcoming events, and we also give you a little bit of information about what our core values are. We also let you know the services that we render. We let you know about the support groups, and if you wanted to make a donation or even possibly volunteer, there's a place where you can do that. And also there's a tab on there that tells you how you can reach us and where you can find us. And there's a tab on the end that I'm also developing because I have a lot of information that I want to share with the world if they'll have me. And so I want to set up a service where I can go out and speak to schools, community groups, churches, wherever there's a need. I want to be there so that I can address those families and give them hope and let them know that they are not alone. You can hear it, but it becomes more personal when you are talking to another parent. That's the other reason why I went back to school to get my master's degree in special education, because not only did I want to relate to the families as a parent to another parent, a mother to another mother, but also I wanted to be respected among my peers in the industry, and so that they know that I know exactly what I'm talking about, because I can give an insight or perspective from both the teacher's perspective or the school administrator perspective, as well as a parent. And so I want to be able to share that information to any type of group who would want me to come in and speak to their constituents, if you will.
You're very special, Shanique. I congratulate you. This is something really kind of critically important that you've done. Some people may be wondering, and let me ask you, is there any cost involved to get involved, to become a participant in Many Babies NYC?
The cost would be your time, your love, and your compassion.
How about that? Time, love, and compassion. That's pretty good. What would you say are your biggest challenges?
The biggest challenge is to get the parents to make that first step and come forward to say that I need help, I need support.
And let me ask you about your twins. How are they doing now?
I have a nickname for them. They're doing well, thank you so much. I call them Havoc and Mayhem. They are amazing, because from where they are now to where they started from, they have made an enormous, enormous progress. They have finally reached grade level. They're in the third grade. And after many, many years of hearing that my children are behind, to get that report that they are finally on grade level, I was ecstatic. Like, I cried. I told anybody and everybody that I came into contact that my boy's on grade level. My boy's on grade level. They're like, yay. What does that mean? I'm like, don't worry about it. Let's celebrate. I took them out and I celebrated with them. I'm like, you guys can do anything you want. You can go anywhere you want. And you know where they wanted to go, Doug? GameStop. Of all places.
I was going to say ice cream shop. Okay, GameStop, that's this as well. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this has been fascinating. Shanique Thomas has been our guest. She's the founder of Many Babies NYC. Shanique, you've been an inspiration. No question about it. I'm so inspired by you, and you sound so into this, which obviously you are. So thanks for taking the time to tell us about it. For anybody in the New York area, go to that website, manybabiesnyc.org, And for anyone who's in another city, maybe you're in Dallas or, you know, Los Angeles or Seattle, go to the website. You can learn more from Shanique on how to start this organization in your area.
Yes.
Good luck. Continued good luck, Shanique. Thanks for your time. Okay?
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
You are welcome indeed. That's it for this edition of CUTV News Radio, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We thank you for being with us. Looking forward to seeing you here next time. Have a great day. Bye for now.